the Subcommittee on Health Policy to order, and I would like to open a work session on House Bill 3486. Sandy, could you give us an update on this bill, where we're at?
Yes, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, House Bill 3486, you will recall, had a public hearing on March 29. This is sponsored by our good representative, Scott Bruin. And this, the original bill requires the Department of Human Services to develop a strategic plan to slow the rate of diabetes caused by obesity and other environmental factors by the year 2010. It also required DHS to collaborate with the Oregon Diabetes Coalition related parties to outline the barriers, method, and review and make recommendations to be contained in that plan. This act would in the original bill have been repealed to January 1, 2010, and it does declare an emergency, or it contains an emergency clause. You do have attached to your packet a Dash 1 amendment. The Dash 1 amendment makes some modifications. It does incorporate the primary responsibilities to include the American Diabetes Association along with the Department of Human Services to develop the strategic plan. It also modifies the implementation date of the strategic plan to allow now, or the effective date of the bill, to by the year 2009. And it also modifies the language to say, instead of just to implement it, to start the implementation process of slowing down the rate of diabetes. As you will see on line 7, that's where the American Diabetes Association and the department shall collaborate with the Diabetes Coalition, so it is a shared responsibility. It specifies in line 9, it adds, in addition to diabetes treatment and obesity prevention, we delete lines 19 through 30 of the original bill, and we add more specific directives of components to be included in the plan. It just identifies environmental factors and preventive strategies, as well as the recommendations be evidence-based, and that the recommendations are focused for redesigning and financing primary care practices that would facilitate a model for the screening of diabetes. So that it's just further specifying particulars for the strategic plan. It also changes the date on line 2 of page 2 from 2010 for the time frame of the plan to 2015, and the repeal date is changed from 2010 to January 2nd, 2016. And that very high-level overview of the Dash 1 amendments.
Thank you, Sandy. Representative Bruin, would you like to comment on these? I know you're going to.
I'll go ahead and move the amendment. Can we go there? Or?
That'd be great. Well, why don't we move it, and then we can talk
about
it.
Yeah, exactly. Madam Chair, I would move the Dash 1 amendment to House Bill 3486.
Representative Bruin has moved the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3486. Any discussion?
Yeah.
Representative Bruin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As Sandy well articulated, you'll remember the first meeting we had on this, and there was some good testimony and some issues regarding a large fiscal or potential large fiscal. And so the idea behind this was to send it back out. The various interested parties, the department, the American Diabetes Association, the Diabetes Coalition, worked out these amendments specifically to, for lack of a better word, smooth the implementation with the primary idea being how do we achieve the goals we want to achieve without getting it blown out of the water by the fiscal. And I, you know, from my view of this amendment, I think they've done that. I think the amendment has enough teeth in it to accomplish the broader goals of what I think the sponsors had in mind with this bill. I don't know if we're prepared to hear anything today, but as far as I know, it satisfies the fiscal hurdle as well. And so I'm a proponent.
Thank you, Representative Bruin. Could we have the department? Is that you, Dr. Cohn, on this one? Thank you. Welcome. Thanks for coming up. If you want to identify yourself for the record.
Chair Kotek, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dr. Mel Cohn. I'm the state epidemiologist at the Public Health Division of the Department of Human Services.
Good to see you today.
Thank you. Nice to see you, too.
Thank you. Questions, I just wanted to make sure that the department had similar interpretations of the Dash 1s, and I wanted to just point out one particular part in Dash 1 that I'd like to get on the record. Actually, it's not Dash 1. It's in the original bill. It's the part where it says making recommendations to the next legislative assembly on statutory changes and funding needed. I think it'd be really critical to know what the estimate on this is, because I think there's a disconnect between making some recommendations and actually asking for the money. And the more we can ask for the money, then we can have some decisions on this side to implement the strategy. So, but in terms of the amendments, are you okay with them? I think they're a good compromise to keep us going.
Chair Kotek, yes, I am okay with them. We were involved in some discussions with Representative Bruhn. He was very amenable to working with us, and I thank him for that. And I think we agree that this is a very important problem and are happy to have some official guidance from you all to continue to work on this issue and hopefully bring it to the next level in terms of legislative involvement. I totally agree with you with regard to funding. All the plans in the world without some funding for implementation are not going to get us very far, so I would look forward to having those discussions with you and the other members of the Legislative Assembly.
Great, thank you. Any questions for the department? Representative
Bruhn. Can I ask if the department is neutral or if they're pro on the amendment?
Chair Kotek, Representative Bruhn, I believe we are pro. This is the first I've seen them,
okay.
But...
Sorry.
Okay. Have to check with the boss.
That's what we like to hear. Thank you. Other questions? I don't see any. Thank you, Dr. Cohn, for being here. So what we have on the table is the Dash 1 amendments to House Bill 3486. Any other discussion? Any objections to the amendments? Seeing none, so amended. And Representative Bruhn?
Yeah, I would move House Bill 3486 as amended to the full health care committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Bruhn has moved House Bill 3486 as amended to the full health care committee with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
I just want to thank Representative Bruhn for all his work on this.
Thank you.
Ditto that.
And I would... I would thank the committee for looking at this favorably, or for hearing the testimony so far.
Yeah.
I know, I
don't
have to for the horse.
Count the votes.
Yeah. Thank you for getting this far, Liz.
Thank you for bringing the topic up. And we do need to address this, and I think that this is a good push forward. So with that, Erin, would you call the roll?
I'm sorry. Aye.
Excuse.
Vice Chair
Barney. Aye.
Vice Chair
Barney. Aye.
Chair Cohen.
Aye. And with that, we will close the work session on House Bill 3486. Representative Bruhn, you want to carry the
ball? I would, yes. Thank you.
All right.
When's it scheduled?
When? That's a Sandy question.
Sandy.
Okay. Madam Chair, do you know when 3486 is scheduled for work session?
Because we will have, I will fill up my directory.
We'll get official amendments, I assume.
We have the
Dash ones. You just
have them. Okay.
Yeah,
but Madam Chair, what I will certainly do upon completion of the meeting is get this amendment down to fiscal so that we can have something on that. We do have this up in full on Monday.
Monday.
The 23rd.
Well, and I know that we talked about getting all the information to the full, and we received quite a few documents, mm-hmm. So you might want to pick the best one of the bunch. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if we can get copies. I just, I don't want to have you.
No, I understand.
Here, so maybe you can.
That's the
directory. I think it's the most helpful one.
I have a lot, too.
Yeah. But one of them might be better than the other.
No, I understand. We'll look at. I don't. If I may ask the committee, were of those documents was there one referenced, kind of highlighted?
There's a lot that hit upon the various physical activity, obesity, and whatnot. The one that hits closest to what we're really talking about is the Diabetes Coalition Plan, which is this one right there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Because that might be available on the web that we can certainly send the web link to them and.
Do you have extra copies?
Not with me.
Okay, never mind. We'll get it offline.
Right.
Tried to make things thank you for reminding me that we need to follow
thank
up with
you,
that.
Thank you, Retreat. All right. Thank you for that. And we will now open a work session on House Bill 2800. And
is Rick saying you can call Rick up with whoever else.
Okay.
Because do you want Rick to explain?
No, I think we're good. You, would you like to tell us where we are on this bill, Sandy?
I will just give the committee just a brief, quick overview. As as I was not part of the day-to-day schematics and logistics of this particular, but as you'll recall, Representative Chair Kotek put a work group together on this that included herself and Representative Flores, and the proponents and opponents of this bill came together. And just to refresh your memory, this was the bill 2800 that authorized the Board of Psychologists Examiner to grant prescriptive authority to certain licensed psychologists. It also directed the board to adopt standards for those psychologists seeking the prescriptive authority and to identify certain drugs appropriate to be prescribed and authorized the board to charge a fee for issuing the certificate of prescriptive authority. You do have -1 amendments, and I believe there are folks here to speak to those amendments, as well as Rick Percovey and the staffer who also worked with the work group, and he is here to provide you any background information as you see fit.
Thank you, Sandy. That was excellent.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. And just I wanted to note for the record that we received a packet from Dr. Mary McCarthy on the bill. And then we also received an email from Jeff Hetherington and Dr. Strassnitter from the Osteopathic Physicians and Surgeons of Oregon in opposition to the bill. So like Sandy said, we had a work group on this. We had two very robust conversations about what to do with this bill. And I'm pleased to say I think there was a lot of movement to recommend some substantive changes to the bill. And I'd like to have up four of the folks who were involved in that work group so we can talk a little bit about the amendments. Betsy Earle, Linnea Lindsay, John McCulley, and Tom Dodson. We might have to pull up another chair. So what I'd like to start off with is everyone has seen the amendments, and they had a little time to review them, but they are rather lengthy. So I was wondering if Dr. Lindsay could walk us through them. You were one of the. You were doing a lot of the word crunching on this.
Thank you.
And I would just say just walk what the changes were, and if it's probably easier to just take questions as they come up because it's pretty substantial changes. If that's all right with everyone. So committee, just feel free to ask away as we go.
Thank you, Chair Kotek,
and feel free to jump in on everybody on the panel as we go. This just makes it a little free-flowing so we don't have to keep going back and forth.
For the record, I'm Dr. Linnea Lindsay from Hood River, Oregon. I'm a clinical psychologist practicing there for the last 15 years and a member of the OPA. The legislative work group that I was privileged to be a part of looked at the concerns that were raised by everyone at the table. And I think it's where we have come is to try to establish a good balance between patient safety, consumer protection, and independent practice and oversight, and try to meld those two pieces together with language of specificity that was able to address both concerns. As you can see, there's added definitions to be able to explain some of the activities that would happen for a prescribing psychologist on page one. Under page two, there was more explanation about how that would be put together, what are the educational requirements. And one of the specific things that was listened to and I think very well addressed was the idea of melding together both the educational didactic component and integrating a clinical experience into that. And I think the language at the ends of page three, the beginning of page four, begin to address that. That the evidence of competency would be premier. The part about oversight was listen to and the concern addressed by establishing a committee on prescribing psychologists that would be under the State Board of Psychologist Examiners and would have a configuration similar to that which was established in the optometry board and the nursing boards to be able to begin to establish some criterion when a scope of practice is changed. And so taking this model and using it together, we were able to meld together a place where the Board of Medical Examiners and the Board of Psychological Examiners could put together a group of people who are professionals who could really look over the detailed development of rules and be able to implement this professional subspecialty in a competent and manner. And then some of the other concerns that were raised were of our very precious people, our children, and how do we address that specialty subpopulation. And a person on that subcommittee will be addressed, and then setting up some specific criterion for consulting with a child psychiatrist when prescriptions are written for children. Most prescribing for children is off-label, not in standard format at this time in mental health disorders. So having that consultative relationship is a very important safety factor. Mm-hmm. And Representative Greenlee?
You expect this amendment puts puts a formulary in place that would relate to the only drugs that can be prescribed. Would you expect there to be off-label drug uses in that formula?
That's a standard of practice used in mental health services, and that is one of the possibilities that the committee could establish is off-label use of medications.
May I ask another question?
Follow? Mm-hmm.
And you decided on this committee approach rather than alternative, say, of having the Board of Medical Examiners manage the process?
Representative Greenleaf, yes, we did. It was a collaborative decision to establish this subcommittee. Given the model that has been developed in the state historically, that this has been a model that has worked, and as the Board of Psychologist Examiners needs to educate itself about this specialty practice, and that eventually it could be subsumed under the responsibilities of the Board of Psychologist Examiners.
Yes, you may. And just so you know, we'll have someone up from the board after this panel.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm laying some foundation for the question.
Go right ahead.
There are other models like this, you say, that have worked in the state?
Representative Green, look, my understanding is the Board of Optometry, when they took on prescribing non-topical medications, did establish such a board.
Similar
board, and I think it was a Senate Bill 45, if my memory is correct.
Then
the Board of Nursing, Dr. Lemandry, who was a part of our work group, made clear to us, and it was a very helpful suggestion, that the Board of Nursing had done the same thing with nurse practitioners.
Thing. Great, thank you. That's good.
So if we could, you're making some opening comments, which is great, but maybe we want to go through the different sections, and that'd be great.
I'll defer to.
That would be awesome to just kind of go through. You feel free to make your comments as we go along. I just want to make sure we get through all of it.
I thought you asked for questions.
Well, no, questions are fine. I just want to
just
go through.
I want to go where you want to go.
Okay. I just want to make sure we get through all the wording.
Representative Kotek.
Identify yourself.
I'm Dr. Dodson, the president of the Oregon Psychiatric Association. One of the concerns that Representative Greenlee raised is the board issue regarding who's supervising this issue, and that is one of the Oregon Psychiatric Association's positions in opposition to this bill, which is that our position is that the psychology board should not be in charge of supervising this program. It should be under the Board of Medical Examiners.
So this wasn't a consensus opinion?
No, it wasn't, Representative Greenlee.
And maybe I should clarify the work group dynamics. We didn't come to consensus necessarily. I want to, first of all, thank everybody on both sides for coming to have, I thought, fruitful conversations. We had folks from psychiatrists and psychologists. We also had a family nurse practitioner, Ms. Lemandry, and then, well, she's a doctor, isn't she?
Doctor.
Yes, she's a doctor. And then Dr. Elizabeth Steiner, family physicians, was there. And there was not consensus with the psychiatrists on this, and I just want to make that noted. But these were substantial amendments that at least moved it considerably from the original bill. So, and that's what the committee needs to weigh. And that's why I want to make sure you get a chance to pop, you know.
Well, I appreciate you mentioning that there wasn't consensus because there was some heated discussion, and you know, we definitely do disagree with this bill. So.
Well, and we're considering a change that is bound to stimulate discussion. So that's pretty mildly maybe. But Dr. Lindsay, if you want to walk us through the amendments, then.
The amendments were adding language around collaboration on page 1, line 14, adding a definition of dispensing on line 18, adding a definition of drug on line 21.
Madam Chair, John McCulley, Oregon Psychiatric Association. Maybe I'm reading this wrong, but under the definition of dispensing on page 1, line 20, it seems to imply that the prescribing psychologist is licensed by the State Board of Pharmacy there. And I don't know if I'm reading that incorrectly, but I'm wondering if that's supposed to be the Board of Psychologist Examiners.
I think you're correct. I think it should be the State Board of Psychologist Examiner.
If I may, Chair, I think there's a missing phrase.
I was going to say.
That speaks to prepackaged by the manufacturer, provided by a pharmacist.
Because we had had this discussion about clarifying that pharmacists in the state would be able to basically fill the prescriptions that were written by the prescribing psychologist. So we will need to clarify that.
This isn't about the psychologist dispensing?
No.
Because we have had that with nurse practitioners where we've given them authority to dispense in rural areas. I assume that's what this was about.
Excuse me, no. Yes. That was not this. We were trying to clarify, that pharmacists would not be penalized if they filled a prescription written by a prescribing psychologist. That was the language. And using the term dispensing was important because you might hand out a sample, but that would not be the same as buying drugs in bulk, repackaging them, and then selling or distributing them, which is what dispensing has a definition. And so this is a little different than...
That is different language.
Okay. Yes, and so if I could, the draft that we had sent to LC described dispensing as means the labeling and distribution of a medication to the prescribing psychologist's patient, which is prepackaged by a manufacturer registered with the State Board of Pharmacy.
It doesn't need to be prepackaged by a manufacturer. That's not what dispensing is.
Well, but the pharmacy is issuing a prepackaged product.
Not necessarily. You have a bottle of 100, they take 12 out. And that's not prepackaged. I think this definition is all screwed.
So what might be helpful is, because I would like to move this to the full because of our timeline.
Yeah.
However,
that's a good thing.
Can we just reiterate the intent of this particular line? Because this is...
The intention of the line was to allow for a prescribing psychologist, thank you, Chair Kotek, to hand out a sample, but it also meant that it would allow a pharmacist to fill a prescription written by a prescribing psychologist.
Does that make sense, Representative Greenough?
Well, I think this is mixing up the two things. I think this dispensing definition comes from the statutes that allow a physician or a nurse practitioner to dispense medication out of their office. And those medications are prepackaged. And so what I think, I just assume that's what this was about. But if we're not talking about giving them dispensing privileges, here's the medicine, take it home, but writing a prescription, I think what you need to do is define a prescription as a legitimate prescription, and then, of course, the pharmacist can fill it. But I agree. I think moving it on and then see if we can straighten this out makes sense.
Because we did have the discussion in the work group around dispensing and distributing, and we wanted to clarify it. We also wanted to make sure that the pharmacists who are licensed in the state can actually follow through with the prescription. So that's what we need to clarify, and we just got these. So, but that's, I think that's a miscommunication with LC. That's not what we had intended there. So we'll need to fix that. So let's just put that as something we should come back to before we decide on moving or not. So continuing on with the Section 1 changes.
Thank you, Representative Kotek. The definition of drug was altered to include those a similar definition to that used in the nursing code and medicine. And there was then established the concept of a prescribing psychologist formulary in Section C, line 4, page 2. Next was a definition of an impaired psychologist, page 2, line 7, section 5, and the subsections following that to match with those that are in other language for other prescribing professionals in this state.
Madam Chair, I would point out that we do agree with that change. I think that's an important part of the language in the bill, is to have that capability to intervene with impaired prescribers.
And it's my understanding that's relatively standard language in other professions, in the medical profession, to
correct
provide with that contingency.
Yeah, and in the problem of giving you too much information, there is a bill coming over from the Senate that adds mental disorders to the Board of Medical Examiner's ability to provide a diversion program.
Oh, good to know. Thank you. And then we have some other definitions in there, which I think are fairly self-explanatory. One of the things that I think is important that was added to Section 1 was the definition of collaboration, because it comes up later. And I think that was one of the things that I was like, well, what does that mean? We have a definition there for that. Does make reference again to the what exactly a prescribing psychologist is. So this is our implementing definitions that we had to add in. Moving on to page 3, Dr. Lindsay.
Thank you, Chair Kotek. The next section talks about what would be required for the issuance of a certificate of prescriptive authority for a psychologist. And a couple of the pieces that were added to that had to do with page 3, line 10, subsection 3, talking about that it would be within the scope of practices defined by the rules of the board, so that a person would be prescribing only within their scope of practice. Section 4 talks about how the criterion are set out. An added section, line 15, is that the person who is applying has at least 2 years of post-licensure clinical experience in a healthcare setting. That was a part of the discussions that happened.
Representative Kotek? I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. Finish your point, and then we'll have Dr. Dawson. I'll just jump in. I do think this was an important addition, because we did have a discussion around some just that the necessity of having some experience in the healthcare setting, and that's what this was about. Dr. Dawson.
Representative Kotek, in regards to that, this is one of the finer points of the revision that, again, we are unsatisfied with, because it doesn't really define what healthcare setting means. Does that mean in a hospital? Does it mean in a clinical psychologist's office, which could easily be defined as a healthcare setting? This discussion came up, if you recall, in the work group Dr. Lindsay works in a hospital setting, was actually the medical director of a clinical psychology or a service at the hospital, which is, you know, clearly that's a healthcare setting. But we're not satisfied with the language healthcare setting, because it could really be anything that a clinical psychologist is doing. It doesn't really define this or limit the psychologist that might be eligible to apply under this bill, if you follow what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for your comment. Dr. Lindsay, comments about that? Or
Chair Kotek, I think if there is a better definition that Dr. Dodson could recommend that would clarify that, in a way that would be satisfactory, we'd be willing to entertain that. I think that giving that definition, the intent, I believe, in the discussion that we had was somebody who was practicing in a healthcare setting, but not limiting it to a hospital, but perhaps a practice that included other physicians or medical care. So I'm not sure what the language would be that would clarify that, but it certainly was the intention of the discussion to not limit that to a psychologist in private practice. I don't think that was the intent of the original discussion.
Representative Kotek, you know, it's awfully hard to make suggestions about a bill that you oppose, and I think you're very clear on how much we oppose this bill. But if it was limited to something in terms of a hospital setting or something like that, that would clearly be an improvement in the bill from our perspective. We would still oppose the bill, but because we don't think, you know, there's other areas with it, issues with it.
Sure. Well, I appreciate that suggestion. And I think it's important. I'm glad we mentioned the intent, because my understanding, too, was a medical setting of some sort. And agreed. I don't know if there's another definition that would apply, to be honest. But I wouldn't want to limit it to just hospitals, because I think that is too limiting. But I think that the intention was medical, not as you like, you know. Because I wouldn't consider the Office of the Clinical Psychologist under the intent of what we are trying to achieve here.
Chakota, could I defer? Perhaps adding a phrase with other non-psychologist medical professionals or something in that. I mean, it kind of makes it difficult, but you're talking about a multiple disciplinary, you know, healthcare setting, and maybe that addresses it. I'm not sure exactly what the language would be.
Representative Kotek, again, I think the idea of having it limited to something like a hospital setting would be much more in line with the original movement to prescribe that was developed by psychologists through the Department of Defense, which was really developed in an attempt to staff the military, and the supervision that was established for psychologists in that setting was really extraordinary because it was in a military setting where, you know, the patients and the psychologists had ready access to a psychiatrist to consult with. So we're not satisfied with just healthcare setting. It's just not. It's not. It's not. It doesn't mean anything. It's not specific enough.
Thank you, Dr. Lawson. Continue, Dr. Lindsay.
The next session talks about what was already stated before about what the academic program or the DOD program would be acceptable. But the additional piece at line 28, page 3, section C, was that there would be an integrated supervised clinical experience. The time frame it would be limited to, how many hours it had as a minimum. And I think there's a little bit of a hiccup where C and D come together, but those are meant to be contiguous, that integrated supervised clinical experience would be under the supervision of a licensed physician or nurse practitioner who is knowledgeable in psychotropic medications. So those two do fit together in terms of explaining what that supervised clinical experience setting would be. Next we talk about the board exam.
Representative Kotek.
Dr. Lindsay, could you just finish first?
Hold sure.
One second.
Thank you, Representative Kotek, Chair Kotek. The next part was that there would be the supervision would include these kinds of criterion, that it would be the supervised clinical experience with competency in lines 13, 15, and talking about the kinds of competency areas that a prescribing psychologist would need to establish, and that in line 18 it says that the competency standards that they must meet that they must be met in order to establish that prescriptive authority. The next additional piece is in line 22, where there would be an additional 50 hours of continuing education in psychopharmacology every 2 years, in addition to the standard 50 hours of continuing education that every psychologist needs to complete. So a person who practiced in this specialty would have double the amount of continuing medical education practice in this subspecialty, and that there would also be, within the 2 years of initial prescriptive area, that the prescribing psychologist would had a written consultative agreement with a medical professional. They'd have their go-to person for a minimum of 2 years in a written relationship that they would be able to advise them at any time in those 2 years. So that somebody would not walk out the door from their clinical experience without having somebody that would mentor them along the way. And then the next section that goes on from four.
Madam Chair, could we comment on section three?
Yeah, I just wanted to get through section three there before we move on to section four. So section three is a significant change to the original bill. This is getting into essentially what's our criteria for doing this. And we've added in clinical experience. We've clarified the type of clinical experience, the length of time. We have some reference to the supervisory oversight, having a written consultation agreement, continuing ed. So there's a lot in here. This is all in addition to the original bill. So comments
on
the section.
Well, I'll start here. John McCulley again. This really is the guts of the bill from our standpoint, because it does establish the minimum training requirements. And even though I think some efforts have been made to strengthen those, I think it's more frosting on the cake than actual cake. I don't think they're as substantive as we would like to see. We still have the 450-hour course that's included here because it is the master's degree in clinical pharmacology that we discussed at the hearing. Mm-hmm. And that course, as we explained during the hearing, is also available if you are more than 100 miles from the site, available via an audio hookup. There's no video hookup involved, but available via audio hookup. And we're concerned that is very inadequate for providing the level of training that is necessary here. The second part is the actual clinical training. We testified at the hearing about the concern. The language in the original bill just said 1 year of training without it being specified. This is an improvement in that it specifies 250 hours, but again, that is basically 6 weeks of training that can be spread over a two-year period. And it just seems to us not the high level of training that is going to be necessary to protect the public in prescribing the medications. The other part that I think is a weakness here, even though I think the intent is good to talk about the supervisory part of this, I've had a lot of response in the initial bill and in this bill regarding the type of supervision. The response I get is that one of the benefits of the supervision that psychiatric resident has, for example, is the number of different supervisors that are involved and the ability to learn different things from those different supervisors. Because of the way this is structured, we don't see that benefit coming to the people who are pursuing this line of training. And in a more technical sense, we're not sure what the board's approved supervising training really means. That's shown in the amendments on page 4 at line 5. We assume the board is going to provide some training for these supervisors, but
and that's a topic we want to take up with the board.
Okay, and then the second part of that is, and maybe this can come from the board as well, is how are those supervisors accountable? In most training programs, if you are undertaking supervising someone, there's a report here, but there's no accountability within the system relative to that training. So this to us is the major part of the bill that is still inadequate.
Representative Kotek, just to highlight a little bit about the words clinical integrated experience, is that I think that our integrated supervised clinical experience, we still really don't know what that means. In medical training, physicians are used to all kinds of direct experience and supervision from other physicians. So there's nothing that really specifies that this means that the supervising physician, for instance, is with the psychologist at the time that they make evaluations regarding medication. For instance, you know, see a patient together and say, okay, let's talk about the case and you know, what would this person need or what would be appropriate. The supervised clinical experience could mean, under the language of this bill, that the psychologist would go in and meet with the patient and then later go in and talk to the supervisor about the patient and then come to some kind of a decision. And the medical model, certainly, at least in the beginning of training, and for 6 years we get supervisory experience, is very much about direct teaching. It's about modeling of teaching. It's about seeing how somebody else does something before it's done, assessing a particular situation. So we, again, are not very satisfied because we don't really know what that means by integrated clinical supervision. Perhaps Dr. Lindsay could clarify that, but
Dr. Lindsay, for the record, comment on that particular piece.
Thank you, Chair Kotek. I think at the time that we drafted this language, we did not discuss that in detail, so I could not say what the consensus or the discussion of that would be. I think that we could consider the term direct supervision if that were necessary. But I think the other issue that becomes difficult in terms of the comment about several different supervisors, again, we're talking about trying to provide clinicians in rural or distant areas, and that access to a multidisciplinary program or a place where a person would obtain multiple input on a daily, on a direct supervisory basis may be difficult to obtain. But getting, being able to have a direct relationship with one provider is much more likely.
Well, and thank you for that. I, to be frank, have the assumption, and this is something I would ask the board as well, they're going to have to set some guidelines here. There's going to have to be some criteria set by the board to say this meets the different criteria. And what I like about the changes is it's not just one thing, and I know we're going to continue to have differing opinions on the pedagogical approaches here on reaching the proper level of expertise. But it's not just one thing. It's this and this and this and this and this. And I think it's that combination that psychologists have moved towards as a way of saying we need a variety of things to meet that need. You know, these are individuals who also have a certain level of education. They might not be under the certain medical model, but that doesn't necessarily preclude them from being able to learn the skills if all these things are achieved. That's my impression from the discussion. So are there questions about this section? Because this is really the meat and potatoes of this.
Representative Kotek, if I could just make one more comment, and that would be that the medical training that is set up by medical schools and residency programs is geared to establish a training program that is felt to be sufficient to provide the kind of safe and competent care that physicians need to be able to provide in the community. And it's far in excess of what's provided for under this bill. And I, with all due respect to the fact that our approaches are different and our educational models are different and the pedagogic approach is different, this is the model that's being used now. And we're not reassured that the model that they're proposing is a workable model because it's not familiar to us. We don't really understand what their supervision means under the terms of the bill.
Thank you. Sure. Representative Greenland?
Well, I've had experience with two different medical training and supervision models that I think apply. First of all, my experience with resident training is that residents have a huge amount of autonomy almost from day one in their residency. I mean, it does start a little bit less and then progress to a lot more, but you won't find a third-year psychiatric resident seeing patients jointly with the psychiatrist. They're going to be seeing their own patients and discussing them with their with their attending. The other example of that kind of supervision that I'm familiar with is the PA supervision, which might, in writing sound more real than it is, and in action it sounds more like what the language is here. The physicians and the PA work in a kind of a coordinated practice, and the PA sees his or her patients, the physician sees his or her patients, and they consult on things when there's when there are issues. I mean, and this may be a little bit of a Rorschach test, but that's the way I read it.
Can I respond to that, Representative Kotek? Along the lines of a third-year resident, I agree with you that a third-year resident would be very likely to see a patient by himself and then to discuss it with his supervisor, although I think there certainly would still be quite a few situations where they would get direct supervisory input and that kind of thing. But a third-year psychiatric resident has really been in the hospital for 4 years previous to that. They've had 2 years of residency and the last 2 years of medical school where they functioned as part of a team of people who've been caring for people. So their level of autonomy at that stage is, you know, has been developed slowly over an extended period of time, because the third year of medical school, you usually start working in the hospital with a team of other physicians, and you continue doing that in your fourth year, your first year of residency and second year, so that in your third year you would start to actually get to have the opportunity to do more independent work. So,
thank you for that clarification. Let's move on to section four.
Chair Kotek, thank you. Section 4, again, just is language we already had before about how the disciplinary authority would be established, and that would be under the Board of Psychologist Examiners. Section 5, but this time includes in Section 3 the impaired psychologist as seen in the definitions in Section 1. Section 5 goes on to describe in detail how the Committee on Prescribing Psychologists under the jurisdiction of the State Board of Psychologist Examiners would be configured and where the appointments would come from. Would you prefer I read through that, or can we...
I don't think we need to read through it. I think what's good to note is we have some folks that will be appointed by the State Board of Psychologist Examiners, and it clarifies there, and then some members appointed by the Board of Medical Examiners.
Correct.
With the recognition that the expertise that the BME would bring to this. I'm actually pleased with what we've come up with there. Are there questions about the membership of that particular group? And then it goes into what the committee's charge is.
Might I comment, Madam Chair?
Yes, you may.
Thank you. We think this is an improvement in the bill. It definitely adds some of the things in that we were concerned about. Just a couple of specific comments on page 6, on the first line where the term pediatric is used. I was talking with Dr. Steiner this morning, and she raised this issue that I'll bring to the committee, wondering if that word should be deleted so that either a child psychiatrist or a pediatrician could fill that role, rather than just saying it has to be a pediatrician. So I offer that. And one of the things...
May I just jump in there? Comments on that? So what I'm hearing is the pediatric physician may be too restrictive. If it just said physician, then it could be a psychiatrist and or a pediatrician. Is that the...
Madam Chair, with the other language that's used here, a physician experienced in treating children who have mental and emotional disorders, it could be either a pediatrician or a child psychiatrist.
Okay. Thank you. Continue.
And the other thing I would like to mention...
striking pediatric.
Yes, that would be that.
Mm-hmm. Is that we mentioned in the previous section about the supervisory training, the training of supervisors, but this committee doesn't seem to have any role in that function. I'm wondering if it might be appropriate for this committee, since they're so involved in other parts of this program, to include supervisory training there. Just a thought.
Okay.
And the third thing here, two more, this is number three. The disciplinary process is on line 17 on page 6. I guess I'm sort of confused how that fits in with the disciplinary processes of the board. Is this committee making recommendations to the board on what those processes should be? I'm just unclear as to what that really means.
Thank you for the question. Maybe the board could define that. I see this as guidelines for the committee. You know, a lot of these would have to be worked out by the board.
And then the fourth comment, Madam Chair, mm-hmm. is the last on lines 27 through 29.
Mm-hmm.
This implies that this board that we've created, that we think is a good idea, is going to determine whether they need to even exist or whether it should be subsumed within the Board of Psychologist Examiners. Our preference would be that it be ongoing and continuing if it's going to exist. And I think that even implying that we're just going to get rid of it at some point is not appropriate.
Thank you for the comment. Well, I actually read that as, you know, if that would seem to make sense to come to pass on the basis of whether the committee thought that was a good idea, I don't see that as, just from the discussion, I don't think anyone sees this necessarily going away very quickly. And I just want to make that point for the record. Dr. Dodson?
A couple of points, Representative Kotek. One is I'm unsure because I don't know the accreditation system very well. I'm not an academic psychiatrist, but I wonder whether the Department of Education is really a robust enough department to be accrediting the schooling that the psychologists are proposing to attend.
Dr. Johnson, what section are you referring to?
It's at the
beginning. Are you talking about page 3 of when it talks about the master's degree?
Yes.
I appreciate your comment, but, you know, the U.S. Department of Education accreditation for a lot of schools, and I think that's just how we do it here. And
well, like I said, I don't know really how accreditation works in the academic environment, but I do know that in residency training programs, they have a very rigorous accreditation for the training programs. I have some familiarity with forensic psychiatry because that's a subspecialty interest, and I teach in that area. And I know that when the recent forensic psychiatry fellowship was set up at OHSU, you know, they had to fulfill a number of criteria. They also sent somebody out to investigate the program and find out, and they talked with the fellows in the program to find out how things ran. So, again, I just have some questions. It's nothing that I have enough information about, but I was just wondering about that.
All right, thank you. On the rest of Section 5 there, I think we've gotten through that. Let's start with Section 6.
Thank you, Chair Kotek. Section 6 is about how there's an adoption of rules about record keeping. These are, again, in line with other medical professionals within the state of Oregon, how there will be an ongoing collaborative relationship with a healthcare professional, and that was spelled out with some specificity from lines 8 through line 13, a prescribing psychologist will be in a relationship on an ongoing basis with a primary care provider for their patients. And then talking about what collaboration means in line 14, and then lines 16 through lines 25 have to do with prescribing for children and a special carve-out piece there for how prescriptions would be written and how that would the collaborative relationship with the child psychiatrist, the consultative relationship, is established there.
Representative Kotek, one of the concerns I have about the bill is also the fact that there seems to be a freedom within the bill to pick whoever you would want to be your particular supervisor, whereas in the medical model, in the nursing model, I think that we aspire to provide people who are teachers who are, you know, exemplify the very best of clinicians. And so I wonder about whether there would be a way to change the bill in some way to leave that less to the discretion of the psychologist and more in line with a more medical model.
Thank you for that comment. Section 7?
Chair, just a quick Mr. comment McCauley? Here. I'm sorry to slow things down. Again, from Dr. Steiner in my conversation with her at line 16 on page 7, she brought to my attention the fact she would like to see some type of acknowledgement or collaboration with the child's primary care physician, as well as the child psychiatrist who may be involved here. She thought that would be appropriate, that the primary care physician involved in treating the child should be notified or informed as to the activities that are occurring here.
I don't read this to say that it would be exclusive. I guess I would assume you're having a collaborative relationship with the primary care physician. Was that the intent? And that you would add on another consultation on top of that? Is that how we're reading this?
That's my understanding, yes. Thank you.
But I appreciate that point. Other comments, questions? Does this preclude that from happening? Doesn't require it, but doesn't preclude it.
It only requires consultation, Madam Chair, as I read it, with the child psychiatrist. It doesn't require any further consultation than that.
Right. So I'm directing them that it would require a consultation with both.
But isn't there another section that requires collaboration with the primary care?
The section directly above that talks about collaboration, Madam Chair, and the I do not see that as exclusive. It's not that you can do Section 1 without Section 3. It's all inclusive, and that's just a further definition for children in that area of Section 6.
So where I'm reading is sort of page 7, line 6. So the prescribing psychologist will have to maintain an ongoing collaboration with the healthcare professional who oversees the patient's medical care, correct? And then if it's prescribing medication for a child, you would also have to consult a child psychiatrist. If that's not clear, maybe we can. I mean, that's my impression.
You could say, excuse me, Madam Chair, in addition to the above, in addition to sections 1 and 2.
So starting on section 3, they say in addition to the above?
When prescribing for a child.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that clarification. Anything else on section 6? And there'll be time for more questions. I just want to make sure we get through it all before we continue the conversation. So Section 7 puts in certificates of prescriptive authority in terms of collecting fees. Section 8, you want to walk through the end here, Dr. Lindsay?
Yes, thank you, Chair Kotek. Section 8 is the grandfathering for those people who did not have the opportunity to have an integrated didactic and clinical experience. It provides an opportunity for those clinicians to be able to obtain their supervised clinical experience subsequent to having finished their didactic or their complete master's degree under the education portion. So that is the intent of Section 8.
Can you just operationalize that for me? Like, what does that mean?
Chair Kotek.
Yeah.
Give me an example. Chair Kotek, there are those of us who finished a discrete didactic master's degree in clinical psychopharmacology, and although we had clinical experience while we were doing that, it isn't under the language or the structure that the board or the board of psychologist examiners has established. And so this would provide the opportunity for the board itself to establish how we can go about that. Obtaining that clinical experience. So that the language of allowing this licensed psychologist to successfully complete the didactic portion of the degree prior to the effective date to complete their supervised clinical experience requirement after the effective date.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
How many people are we talking about?
There are 10 of us, and it's not clear that all of us will pursue prescriptive authority, but there are 10 people who have completed...
Meet the didactic.
...who've completed the didactic in the state of Oregon without having done the integrated clinical.
Thank you. Mr. McCullough.
Thank you. I have to say this is a very troubling part of the bill, well, other parts, but the temporary certificate seems to, as I'm reading it, say that if you've already completed this didactic program, that you can begin prescribing while you're getting the additional clinical training. Maybe I'm reading that incorrectly, but the two tiers that are set up here, I think, are troubling from a policy standpoint, that you establish one set of rules for people who are in one circumstance, and for people in another circumstance, you say you have to do these other things. We would prefer that it be consistent and that everybody followed the requirements that are outlined in the bill if this bill were to pass.
Thank you. And Section 9 and 10?
Thank you, Chair Kotek. Section 9 is just about when this act would become operational, so that it was a clear criterion for a start date or to move this to an operational status. And Section 10 was, I believe, what you all call an emergency clause. Mm-hmm. So that's my understanding. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Questions from the committee? My intention is to recess for a few minutes so I can chat with a couple of you about this before we consider moving it on. But I want to make sure that you had all your questions answered or any final comments.
I have a letter here that is, I don't know if it's appropriate to introduce this to the committee, but it is another letter that is opposing this bill. So I don't know if that's out of order. Please tell me.
If you could submit it to our committee assistant, okay. So I can make that in the record.
Madam Chair, I'll just add a concluding comment here that I appreciate the opportunity to participate in this process. I think it's helped us recognize the quality of people who are involved here. I would say that our preference would be to look at a more medical model. The physician assistants is what we suggested to the work group, the doctor keepers brought to the work group, and we think that is a more appropriate model than this one. And as a result, we aren't going to be able to support what you see before you, but nonetheless, we'll continue bringing those issues forward.
Thank you. Dr. Lindsay, any comments?
I just want to say that, thank you, Chair Kotek. As of today, there's no open practice in Umatilla, Wasco, or Hood River County for psychiatry or psychiatric services. No open practice, and that's where I practice. And I thank you for the opportunity, too, to meet some great colleagues and to work together. But timeliness is of a concern. Thank you.
Thank you.
with that,
we're going to recess for 10 minutes. I'd like to call Deborah Orman from the Board of Psychologist Examiners up. And for the record, submit another email into the record from Alicia Philpott, stating opposition to the bill. It's actually from... Right. Well, it's actually from, and I think we might have had this before, from Dr. Budin from the Oregon Pediatric Society.
Great. Thanks.
Is it part of that process that we get Elizabeth Steiner and the family physicians back off their opposition?
Dr. Steiner and Dr. Lamondri participated and had very constructive suggestions. I didn't talk with each of them individually, like where they were, but I think they were a lot more comfortable with the amendments, but I don't know where they were finally on the
I think bill. I saw something from Dr. Steiner that said they backed off my position, but
I don't know for sure. Thank you for being here. If you could just state your name for the record, and we just wanted to hear what the board's thoughts were on the bill.
Chair Kotek, members of the committee, my name is Deborah Orman. I'm the executive director of the Board of Psychologist Examiners. Do you want to ask me a question?
Well, your thoughts on the Dash 1 amendments. I mean, a significant change. There is some expectations on the, what the board would be doing. And in terms of the committee and the formulary and all of that, we'd love to hear your thoughts on the supervisory training portion as well. And I don't know anything about the Board of Psychologist Examiners, so maybe you want to start up there.
Okay. Chair Kotek, members of the committee, the Oregon Board of Psychologist Examiners licenses and disciplines psychologists in the state of Oregon. We're a public protection, consumer protection agency. That is our, the core of our mission. When this bill was in its concept stage, we did talk about it, the board and myself, and felt that it wasn't within the scope of the mission of the board to take a position one way or the other, being as they're a public protection agency and, you know, they don't take positions on this sort of thing. However, they wanted me to convey to the committee that if the legislature feels that it would be a task for them to do, that they would be willing to carry it out.
Thank you. Other comments about the...
Well, you asked specifically about the supervision component, and I need to say when I was sitting in the back of the room and a couple of times somebody said or a couple people said, you know, I wonder what the board is going to do about this. We haven't discussed it because we didn't know how it was going to turn out. I believe it just got finished night before last.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So we haven't had a meeting since then. However, I can tell you that we have a residency supervision program now that's a one-year postdoc program. So I have a sense of what this could look like and the components of it. It's a contract, supervisory contract between a resident, a postdoc again. It's a one-year residency. We oversee that and monitor those contracts. We have a supervision orientation training for supervisors as well as the residents to know what a good experience looks like, a good supervisor experience. And we do have criteria for what and standards for what that relationship looks like and how it works on a day-to-day basis, how many hours it is, et cetera. And I would see something similar with these different, in this particular bill, there's the supervision, 250 hours, then there's a two-year consultation agreement, and then the ongoing collaborative relationship. So I would assume each of those would be its own component with its own standards, et cetera.
Thank you. Representative Green?
Yes. Could you share with us the fiscal that looks like we're going to get in this bill?
Sure. Chair Kotek, Representative Greenlich, share what the... I turned in a fiscal impact statement and the content of it.
Yeah.
I guess the main contents of it are two pieces. One is this committee, which has now 8 members. I was assuming statewide representation as we're a statewide agency. As I spoke before, kind of the care and feeding of that group, and I assume they would meet, I'm projecting how often they would meet, which I would say monthly for a year, to carry out all these different components, the standards, the disciplinary processes, the disciplinary standards, because we don't have disciplinary standards for this subspecialty. The standards that we have now, the ethical standards, don't particularly apply to prescriptive authority, so we'd have to create, and if we looked at all the components of what this would take to do it right, this committee would oversee all of that and give their expertise depending on what, you know, their field that they came from. So there was the staffing of that committee and the bringing those folks together.
Per diem, you expect?
Excuse me?
You expect per diem and things like that?
I would assume so. A lot of our volunteers, we give them continuing education, but as these folks are not in our field, I wouldn't know how that would work. We might be able to make an arrangement with the BME or others to give continuing education for their participation, and that would make it a little bit less. We could have less travel depending on where these folks came from, things like that. But the other big piece would be someone to staff the project. It's a completely new and different programmatic branch for us, and we don't have currently anyone who could take this on in the office. We have three people in the office, including myself. And
pretty
I saw
skinny
it as a,
staff. Huh?
Excuse me?
Pretty skinny staff.
Which is common with the boards. But I saw it as a limited duration, maybe a two-year position, just to create the infrastructure of this. And after that, it would depend on what it looked like when we got done. You know, would there be staff needed or not? And it's hard for me to say from here today how the committee will carry out its vision.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome, Representative. Other questions for the board? I'm sorry, was there an actual amount on the fiscal?
Yes. The fiscal impact statement that I submitted, I believe it was about $200,000 for the first biennium, the 2000-2009. And
that's for one staff?
No, that's for the whole project. The committee changes to our database, changes, you know, creating workstation for somebody, you know, all the costs that go into it. So that's where I came up with that. I'm new to state government management, so it's possible that we could put a different level of person to oversee the project, and that would reduce the cost. And I would love to talk to staff personnel or whoever it would be that would help me to say, if this is what this person is going to do, what would be the appropriate level? Because I'm not totally familiar with all of the classifications of staffing. Mm-hmm.
We're just checking to see if this bill currently has a referral to the Ways and Means Committee, and it does. I'm just checking on that. Other questions for the board? Do you have any concerns about the amendments in terms of your capacity to deal with it? I mean, besides staffing issues.
I think there's some... I would hope there'd be a little bit more tinkering about... how, for example, the supervision relationship or the collaborative relationship. Mm-hmm. Typically, when I spoke about the program we have now, this residency supervision process that's a one-year postdoc, they are our licensees. The supervisor is our licensee, and the resident is our proposed licensee. And so we have authority over them. So when we get a complaint and discipline the resident, we also look into the practice of the supervisor, you know, how did this go wrong? And with this model, we wouldn't have authority over the collaborator, the person they're collaborating with, the supervisor, et cetera, because they're they're medical professionals.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be able to be accomplished through working with the Board of Nursing or the BME, some kind of a complaint referral or something like that. And there's a couple of other places in the bill. When I look at how we'll administer it, there's some kind of day-to-day how will this work piece of slide and questions that I have
specifically.
And
I realize you might just have seen the amendment, but
yeah. Well, there's a part in there about the impaired psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
And it appears that it's directing, this bill is directing us to put people in that program almost as a rehabilitative situation when it's possible that we may not want to direct somebody into an impaired program. We might just, because of the egregiousness of what they have done, just revoke their license. But it looks like everyone who might fit an impaired psychologist would be routed into that program. So it's things like that. They're very, I want to say they're technical, but when I look at how would we deal with this on a day-to-day basis, the other piece somebody brought up, there's a few that people already brought up, but one of them was who would oversee the discipline of these prescribing psychologists. It almost sounds like this committee would, and maybe... Again, that's for everyone to kind of work out what that would look like pragmatically.
Thank you for the clarification.
Representative Flores?
Thank you. Just to go back to the impaired psychologist piece, that is on page 5 at line 18, 19, 20. It talks about the board developing a standardized disciplinary procedure. So I see that as a manner of discipline rather than a program. So am I misunderstanding the normal protocol?
Yes, earlier there's a place where it refers to, it might be, that if we had a psychologist that was deemed impaired, they would be sort of routed through this program.
Oh, it's on page 2. I apologize.
Uh-huh. May I just jump in? So you currently don't have any track for impaired, so if someone who is licensed is having mental illness, physical illness, any of these, there's no impaired psychologist program?
We don't have a formal program like, say, the bar or the BME has, but we do send people as part of their discipline and probation. We might suspend somebody and send them for counseling, therapy, and those sorts of things as part of, we just do that routinely as opposed to part of a, you know, established program.
Gotcha. Well, because in following up with Representative Flores from page 5 there, that's the only reference to impaired psychologists, I think, in the amendments.
No, yes?
We define impaired psychologists, and then we make a reference to it around disciplinary process. But I'm just...
Okay. I agree with you.
Okay.
Representative Flores, page 5, line 16, I mischaracterized it. The concern there is... that, again, on a day-to-day, looking at a discipline case or a complaint, the board does not standardize any kind of complaint because they're also unique. The circumstances are unique. The relationships are unique. We don't standardize and say, if you're an alcoholic, this is how you'll be disciplined, or if you're someone who's crossed boundaries, this is how you'll be disciplined. Each one is very unique depending on the situation, and so we do not standardize our response to complaints nor standardize our discipline.
Thank you. Other questions for Ms. Orman? Thank you for being here.
Thank you
for your testimony. Thank you. So thank you, everyone, for being here today in the testimony. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to carry over the bill to Tuesday because we want to make sure that we tweak the amendments with some of the suggestions that have been made. So the intent would be still to move it to the full committee, but to make some changes. And I'm just going to note the ones, and if I miss any of these, colleagues, that you want us to consider, maybe it's the time to speak up. But we need to fix on page 1 of the dash ones the definition of dispensing. We need to clarify on page 3, line 16, healthcare setting. And my intention there would be more, I don't want to make it too restrictive, but I think we want to clarify that it's medical. So trying to figure out if there's a definition we can borrow or if we have to actually say hospital, primary care, whatever, to clarify that. On page 6, on line 1, delete the word pediatric. On page 7, line 16, add language that clarifies that in addition to the collaboration with the primary care person, medical care person, that if it's a child, the prescribing psychologist would also consult a child psychiatrist, so clarifying that. And the last item,
excuse me,
yes.
I think, Madam Chair, it's the other way around. It already requires consultation with the child psychiatrist, so the amendment would be to add the primary care.
Right, it would say, in addition to all the above, if you have a child, then you have to do this, and it's the idea of making sure that there's the there's the primary care person plus the psychiatrist. So we'll just figure out to make sure that it's assumed that not only do you collaborate with the medical person, you're going to consult the child psychiatrist. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, there's some discomfort among the committee about Section 8, and we will probably be recommending to delete that, which is the grandfather clause, more or less. And that's what we're going to do. So we're going to get those amendments up and carry this over in work session until Tuesday, at which time we'll have a very brief conversation about those amendments, make sure they look the way we want them to look, and then get it onto the floor for further discussion. So any questions, committee members? Seeing none, with that, we will close the work session on House Bill 2800. And any calendar items, Sandy?
We have full tomorrow.
We have full. We have lots to read. Bring home your folders. And with that, we're adjourned.